Well, hey there, friends. You doing good? That old couch with just a few too many pillows and blankets treating you right? Have you been freshened with your freshest refreshment? Well, that's quite a storm outside, so I think I'll just throw a few more logs on the fire and start reviewing The Plays the Thing, another combat-free RPG for you and me. It's Sweater Weather, our new November celebration of cozy or combat-free games. And no, this is not a permanent change to the intro music, so hey, my chill and wonderful, comfortable pals, you can stop emailing me about it. So comfy, so system mastery, so sweater weather. Hey everybody, welcome back to System Mastery Sweater Weather, our cozy November event where we just review combat-free games or games that just make you feel warm and fuzzy inside. And this is going to be pretty much only the former.
Yeah, pretty much.
Didn't really know what we were getting into. This is The Plays the Thing. It is a magpie game written by the main magpie guy.
The magpie guy.
I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up. But he's the one who is somewhat infamous for reasons I'm not fully confident in explaining to people.
Sure.
So I just won't. If there's something wrong with the magpie guy and you already know about it, hey, grats you.
Mark Truman.
Mark Truman, thank you. Mark Diaz Truman. That's who this is. Okay, yeah.
And edited by John Wick.
I know. I noticed that right away, that it was edited by John Wick, which I'm not going to say that the first thing I did on getting into the garage to start recording tonight was ask John if he ever found a point where it mentioned the core difficulty ranks in this game, because I could not find one.
Hey, here's the thing. This... When we review games...
Mm-hmm. When we review games.
When we review
which we
games,
do.
When that happens, mm-hmm. on the rare occasion when we review games...
I'd never review a game. I don't know what you're talking about.
I would never.
Yeah, that sounds crass.
Beneath me.
Churlish and insubordinate.
On those situations, usually I will either... like be into the game or I will dislike the game. It is rare for a game to fully bounce off me in a way that this game did, in a way where this game was like, I would read most of what was in this book and then go, what the fuck did I just read? What was any of that? And I would go back and read it again and go, yeah, none of this is sticking in me. I do not give a fuck about any of this. It's not that I dislike it. It's not like it's bad. And I don't particularly like it either, because I also don't see the point of it.
Okay.
It is a weird situation where every time I tried to read this book, I was like, nope.
So it's just got like a Teflon effect on you.
Yeah, where it slid right off.
It's just skate like you're just magpie gamesophobic, and the games just fall right off you.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just water off a duck's back.
That happened to me with their most recent thing, which I understand there's been some controversy regarding the fact that they are the people who are doing the PBTA avatar.
Yes.
That they pretty much dropped a bunch of other shit that they owed people because they had Avatar, baby, and that's money. And it was a fuckload of money.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and so I know that there was a little bit of that. I don't remember what they dropped in favor of, but I get it. I know why they did that. That was like $75 million or some crazy thing for that. And or 7.5. I don't remember. This is years before all of the Satine Phoenix controversy and discourse began, or a year, I think. But I dropped my pledge when they announced that she was going to be in the AP for it, because I was like, oh, I hate it when one of the reward tiers is, we'll give a person who's famous for being famous more money.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, I'm good. I was hoping you'd pay your people more or something. But if you're just going to cut a check to the stickiest people in the internet, then pass.
Yeah, because goddammit, we're the stickiest people in the internet.
But that's because we don't wash.
We're the sticky bandits.
And we're going to rob that McAllister household this year, I tell you.
Come hell or high water.
Especially the one in New York, because we're the sticky bandits and not the wet bandits.
Yeah, that's why it's hell or high water, because we were the wet bandits.
Uh-huh. And we've abandoned it, so now it's hell, not high water.
But yeah, this is a game about improving versions of Shakespeare plays.
Yes, and when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's a good trade dress. That's a good livery by which to present this game, right? Like, it's really about
playing actors who are in a play and they are trying to change the play to make it more about them so they can be cool, they can have more fun in it. And I thought to myself, well, that's just neat. I love that idea. I can't wait to get to the part where it addresses plays that aren't Shakespeare so I can discuss like Neil Simon or some musicals or something, you know, just have some fun with it. What if it's some Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff? Or no, I was wrong. This is 100% Shakespeare.
Well, yes, this whole thing is being actors attempting to put on a Shakespeare play.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. That is what this is about. But also, when I saw it, and your character, instead of a class, you have what type of actor you are, like, known to be. So you are, like, a leading actor, or an ingenue, or a ham, or someone who normally plays villains,
yes,
whatever. And when I saw that, and I saw that each of them has a power based on when you are currently acting in the play, a power you can use,
mm-hmm,
and a power that's offstage for when you aren't. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting to me as far as getting into the politics and backstage drama,
yeah,
of a play and, yeah, putting one of those on. But that is 1,000% not the point of this.
No, it's more like you're it seems like it should be that you're arguing with the playwright, except that's Shakespeare, so you can't. So you're, I guess, you're arguing with like the director and the dramaturge about the minor changes you could make to make the play more interesting, except that it all happens on stage. So it's more like you just kind of go, you know, I shall not drink this poison. Screw you, apothecary, or whatever.
Well, I mean, there's the off stage stuff, but that, when I was reading this, I was expecting it to be like, oh, this takes place both on the stage and then, you know, there will be points where you're like, oh, you go out to dinner with your fellow actors, or, yeah, you're at home practicing,
I was
something like that.
Backstage action, I was expecting it.
But instead, it's, if you do want to be like, hey, I think it's dumb that, you know, the queen drinks poison, I would like to say that she doesn't. You, on, while you're acting out the scene, you just say, cut, hey, my dude, hey, playwright, I would like to change the play in such a way. And then you make a roll, and you either do or don't. And I'm like, let me have any not the play. I mean, I get it. The play is, of course
the thing. That's the name of the game.
It's, I think maybe I had expectations that the game did not have and I should not have had going in.
That's fair. I mean, I get what you're saying, largely because to me it feels like a sort of, it's a nebulous space in which the play of this game takes place. Which is to say that, I'm not really sure what's happening. Like, are you in the middle of a dress rehearsal and you just go, cut, cut, I hate that I stabbed this guy through the curtain here. It's dumb.
Yes.
I don't want to do that. So it's like, isn't that kind of late in the production? You've been rehearsing, if it's dress rehearsal, you've been rehearsing this for weeks already.
Yeah,
it's
weird. It is basically, you are, I mean, not quite, I would say, dress rehearsal,
mm-hmm,
but more like, all right, you are at a point where you are attempting to put this on. You are far enough along that people are acting out like the full play, essentially.
Yeah.
But also, while not specifically Shakespeare, the person who runs the game, the DM, is the playwright.
Yes, which is, weird, because the first thing it says is like, hey, don't think you have to play like as playwrights in Shakespeare's time, working for Shakespeare. You could set this in the 1920s. It doesn't matter.
And I'm like, okay. Although that does make me go like, okay, so are we saying that I am a playwright and writing Hamlet, which is an original play and was not done by Shakespeare? Shakespeare never existed. It's 1920 and I'm writing this play?
No, it's that Shakespeare's a vampire.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are undead.
Yes, which is immediately the joke I wanted to get to. But yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I get why they went with the playwright as the title. I would have probably, I only worked in a theater for like 2 years, and I was a membership representative. Although theaters are tiny, so I ended up hearing a lot of play stuff and interacting with the people who were actually behind making the performances. I would have called the DM in this game the dramaturge instead of the playwright, because the playwright implies
called them the demiurge.
Yeah, you know, because it's the Gnostics, the thing.
Yeah. I mean, part of me was really like, oh, this is interesting in that you're making noises off the RPG, but you've made it about Shakespeare instead.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting thing about being like, yeah, we're going to have a play about making plays, about role-playing, about role-playing.
Yeah, it's a role-playing game about playing in a play while changing the play. That's the basic concept of it is you play as actors. John already mentioned the types of actors you can play as, villains, hams, ingenues, leads. There's a couple more in the back, I think, because this is a Kickstarter thing. And you basically, you are them. That is your role. You're an actor, so you're like a ham actor. Your job is to be funny and to steal the spotlight. But the play of the game isn't like you putting on dramatic performances or rolling to see if your performance is sufficiently dramatic to impress an audience. Rather, all of the mechanics are about you making changes to the play that reflect what you as a ham would like.
Yeah, it's...
it's very interesting.
It's weird because when you start out, whoever is running it, whoever's going to be the playwright...
Mm-hmm. Shakespeare.
Yeah, whoever Shakespeare is, it's Shakespeare.
Yeah, it's Thomas Marlowe.
Yeah. Whoever Shakespeare is, Thomas Marlowe, is running your game. Now, whoever is being the playwright basically picks a Shakespearean play.
Yeah.
And then gets all of the, like, characters from it and just sort of writes down their name.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
a plot or two.
Like, basically 1 point for each of them. A plot and a prop and a place, I guess. Or, no, a part. That's what it is.
Right.
A part.
Thank you. Yes.
So you get a part, which is what you are. So, like, if I write down Lear, that's the name, and then the part would be King.
Yeah, Old King, that kind of thing.
And then you could have a plot, which would also be, like, Father.
Yes. Yeah, you're like a disappointed father because of the true daughter that loves you the most, and she is telling you the truth and you hate it, so you send her away. I'm going to be honest, I am not a Shakespeare expert. I played Falstaff in a college production of The Merry Wives of Windsor, and I don't remember a fucking lick about it.
Good.
or any other Shakespeare play, to be honest. So if we sound dumb here, if I'm like, yeah, his shit daughters, Reagan and Goneril, and I'm right, that's because it was in this book, not because I knew.
Yes. Now, you pick one of the plays to do, and of course, like you were saying, this is a Kickstarter, so it has like an expansion to it, but baseline, they're like, okay, you're either going to do a comedy, a tragedy, or a history.
Yes.
And
they do add another one towards the romances. Towards
yeah,
the
they
end, yeah.
They add stuff like The Tempest on at the end,
yes,
where it gets a little weirder.
Mm-hmm. When he was in his Revolution 9 period, when Shakespeare got experimental and started dating Yoko Ono.
Shakespeare had to do a lot of drugs.
Shakespeare picked up the sitar late in his career. And
So, yeah. You'll pick a play, you'll have a cast list down, and then the people who are playing it, who are going to be the actors, once they've made their actor, will then start bidding on if they want to be someone or if they want to add more shit to it. So if you have, like, all right, here's Macbeth. He's a knight, mm-hmm, for his part, and he's got a prop of a sword, and here you go. And great. If you're like, cool, I want to be Macbeth, then you can say, I'll take Macbeth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you can go, hey, I know this story. I remember Macbeth. Here's a story point. Also, Macbeth is a fairy.
A penguin. Yeah.
You're like, great. You can add in dumb shit to any character.
Yeah.
And that is the point of the game, is basically taking a Shakespearean play and absolutely fucking it.
Yeah. That's basically the idea, is to mess with the play in fun ways and still kind of hit the beats. It's interesting that I honestly, this is the part that bounced off me harder than any other part of the book, was this bidding mechanic that the game starts with every time, where First of all, you're not going to use every character from the play because Shakespearean plays are too big and too long to make into one-shot RPG sessions.
Well, yeah, but even then, when they acknowledge it, they're like, oh, obviously you're not going to do every fucking scene from the play. You're not going to have every character.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a listing of like, all right, here are the main like six or so people from this play.
Yes.
Pick one of those. And even then, you're like, you're probably not playing with, you know, maybe you are playing with like seven people and you want to do that. Great. But if not, you know, the playwright just plays whoever else needs to. If you're like, we're doing Macbeth and literally no one wanted to be Lady Macbeth, then I guess it falls on you.
Yeah. So I didn't understand quite why this part is the way it is. You'd think you just have the players in the play announce, you know, that they hear you're doing Titus Andronicus and they're like, oh, shit, son, I want to be Moodius or whatever. I'm so super excited about that. Fourth son, best son, baby. But like, instead it's presented as part of the game that the playwright is going to be like, I now place on offer Titus Andronicus himself, a noble Ronan general against the Goths. And I guess it's supposed to go around the table and either you say, yeah, I want that, you pass entirely, or you sweeten the pot to try and get someone else to take it.
It's a weird thing because after you make your character, everyone gets 5 story points.
Yeah.
And when you're doing the casting of the play and everyone's going to get whatever character, I think each character to start with is worth 3 story points. So if, you know, they go, here's Macbeth, do you want Macbeth? And you say, yes, no changes, I'll take it. I'm the first person to go in the circle.
Yeah.
And I'll have that. You get 3 story points.
Yeah.
Now, you can pass and just do nothing. Or, like you were saying, you can sweeten it where you give up one of your own story points to change a character you're not going to be.
Yes.
So you're like, I know, I'll give up my ability to affect the narrative in order to make someone else's character more interesting.
Yes.
And while part of me is like, yes, your players should be invested in making everyone's characters as interesting or, you know, silly or tragic or whatever you're doing, there's that anti-incentive there of,
yeah,
I'm giving up the one resource that this game has because it only has the one resource,
yeah,
and I'm giving it up for something I'm not using.
And the moment someone else takes it, they have no incentive to keep playing the silly game. If the first person is like, I'll take Macbeth in whatever form you've sweetened the pot to get me to take it, and from now on, I'll just pass on everything, because why would I give up story points? I'm set, and I have a cool character already.
Yeah, and again, I understand the idea of like, yeah, you want your players to be invested in everyone else having this.
Yeah.
But again, it is, I have to give up my own personal ability to do things in order to get it.
Yeah.
And if you have played before, and you're like, oh, I know that the playwright just hands out story points like fucking Tic Tacs, and I'll never need to worry about it.
Yeah.
During the beginning of this, I'll fucking spend all my starting story points on changing things because I know I'll get it during play.
And it'll be fine.
Great. Yeah. But if you're going in as someone that's like, I've never played this before, we're trying this out for the first time, you know, the person who's running it, the playwright, hasn't done it before, we're a brand new group doing this, then you have to rely not only on a brand new playwright having the presence of mind to go, oh, I need to be handing these story points out.
Right.
But then you have to be able to be like, all right, I need to trust that they will do that in the future. I need to not have that very ingrained sense of this is my only way of doing a thing. I should hold on to it.
Yeah, for sure. That you feel like you're giving up the only resource the game has.
Yeah, because...
And for what? So you can declare that Macbeth is not only, you know, like a beloved son, but also a secret thief or something.
Yeah. You know, you go around, you're like, oh, I made Macbeth. I would like to give the part that he is also king. Hey, how about that? He's already king. Eat a dick. Who cares? I'm ruining your play.
And you're not. One of the things I did want to stress about the opening part of this book is that it is well written from the perspective of the writer. Like, Truman starts out by pointing out that he ascribes to a theory by some other game designer, I forget his name or their name, and that it's, you have to answer these 3 questions when you're writing a role-playing game, and so here are my answers to these 3 questions. Like, What is the point of this? How is the fun accomplished from this? What are people meant to take away from this? And I like that kind of thing where there's a pretty solid thesis about why this game exists.
Yeah. And that was, I think, the reason that I bounced so hard off of this is I'm like, this isn't for me. This is very clearly not a game for me.
I can tell you, yeah, there's a core disconnect for me as not a huge Shakespeare fan, because the whole point of this game is changing things about Shakespearean plays. So unless it's like one of the two that is constantly being remade for TV, then I'm going to be like, oh, would you like to change something about, I don't know, Much Ado About Nothing? And I'll be like, I don't know what fucking happens.
Exactly.
I don't know what change I could make and what it would do.
That is the main issue I had with this, is I'm like, even as someone that has, you know, taken classes about Shakespeare and read more than, say, probably your average person.
Sure. You've got kind of lit degree.
Yeah. I have a degree in literature.
Yeah.
So I've had slightly more exposure to it than, say, a standard person would, who is like, I don't know, I've seen Romeo plus Juliet.
But I've trod the boards, but I don't remember doing it.
So even then, I'm like, I could not possibly tell you about most plays of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Like the vast majority. If you were like, hey, what happens in, you know, like, I don't know, even one of the big histories, like what happens in Richard III? I'd be like, I don't fucking know. I don't have a goddamn clue.
Yeah, there's nothing that's scarier to me than the notion of playing this game and having the playwright be like, and now let me divide Henry the VI parts among the lot of you. And I'm like, I hope I play Henry the VI.
Even that, I would be like, I hope I don't, because I have no idea what the fuck is supposed to happen. And the game tries to, again, give you some sort of handhold in that, in the back, when they have all the descriptions and the cast list and everything for the plays, they're like, all right, we break every play down into 5 acts, and we say what the act is and what each character is going to do in that act.
Yeah, they do. Like I mentioned it earlier, but I think we got off track immediately, like we like to do, that plays are too long to do. So instead, you divide them into 5 little scenes that kind of jumble up the plays so that they are 5 tiny improv scenes long.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have no idea what happens in Richard III, they go like, all right, so Act 1, Richard III has made King Edward suspicious of Clarence, resulting in Clarence's imprisonment in the Tower of England. And Richard goes to visit Clarence before he is imprisoned and claims that he will. And I'm like, even your summary of this, if I was playing in this game, I'd go, what?
Now, to be, let's put the cards on the table here and be polite. It just happens that neither of us are big Shakespeare people. I imagine that if you were a big Shakespeare person, you'd probably be very excited by this concept. So.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Because it's not that the game is bad. Again, it's just not for me. Because the other problem I have with it is, even if it is a thing, like, even if you go straight to, like, Romeo and Juliet, a thing where, you're like, even the most, like, non-well-read person goes, yeah, I know that fucking story.
Yeah.
Even that,
I'm still going to get it wrong. I never remember what the difference between Tybalt and Mercutio is.
Well, the problem for me is I look at it and go, what is the point of making this an RPG? Because either you're like, oh, we're going to do a fun, you know, retelling of Romeo and Juliet. I'm like, great, that's a play. That's not an RPG, that's just a play. And if you're like, oh, we're going to do it where we're like, Romeo never meets Juliet. And you're like, okay.
All right. So that's a different play.
Then this is it. It just feels like improv exercises rather than a game. And I know that that's going to be a a division in RPGs where there are going to be times where I'll have that opinion about an RPG and then people will be angry at me for having that opinion. I know that will be an existing thing.
That's why I'm equivocating so hard to be like, hey, if you're a huge Shakespeare fan, this might be for you.
Whereas I'm like, even if you're a huge Shakespeare fan, you probably love it because of what Shakespeare wrote. And so when it's like, oh, what are you going to do as Laertes? You're like, the same shit Laertes did in the play because I like that.
Don't ask me about Laertes, bro. Let me talk about someone else, bro.
God damn it.
Someone remembered Renaissance Man.
Someone certainly did. Someone forced someone else to remember Renaissance Man.
I remember more about Renaissance Man. In fact, that is my only frame of reference for whatever the fuck Laertes is. I think he's from Hamlet because I remember that Danny DeVito.
Hamlet.
I just remember Danny DeVito saying, "We're gonna read Hamlet. We is."
Yeah, so. Laertes. You know, he has a lot of very famous lines, like, you know, "Never a borrower or a lender be."
Oh, that's him. Okay, cool.
Laertes had a bunch of shitty platitudes. Scrivener.
I've been falsely misattributing that quote.
You know, famous quote from Laertes. I would prefer not to. Anyway.
I'm just really trying to put my cards on the table here so that people know full well that I don't know dick about Shakespeare.
Just to get into a little bit of the crunch, the few mechanics that exist.
Sure, let's talk about those.
You have three stats that are called acting chops.
Yes.
You have your Logos, Pathos, and Ethos.
And, of course, D'Artagnan.
And D'Artagnan. Your fourth unmentioned stat.
The asshole one that tries to fight your other three stats.
I've got three in D'Artagnan.
But yeah, Logos, Pathos, and Ethos, where, God, this is hard to even remember. The only one I can straight up remember is that Ethos is the one that refers to physical objects and locations within the play.
Yeah, so... Your logos is essentially changing events. So you're not changing the way like a person acts. You're not changing the scenery or any of the props or anything like that. So instead it's, you know, Hamlet survives getting stabbed.
Yeah. Exit stage right, pursued by two bears? That's probably an Ethos thing.
Yeah. So Logos is changing events, which yes. You would think would be, you know, the most things.
The vast majority of them. Although I do like the idea of the Ethos player just changing every location. Every time he plays, he's just like, and we're in sunny Southern California.
Yeah, they're like, all right, Act 3 takes place in the main hall of the castle. And you're like, the fuck it does. We're on the beach, baby.
Yeah, Ethos specialists are the ones who make Hollywood adaptations. We're doing 10 Things I Hate About You. Yeah, thank you. Please and thank you. I call Julia Stiles.
So, Pathos is your ability to change the emotions or decisions of the characters in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't changing the outcomes as much as you are changing what they are doing. So mm-hmm. You might say, like, all right, the end of this scene... Laertes is still going to get fucking stabbed and murdered.
Yeah.
But we're going to make it so that Hamlet isn't a fucking crazy person in this. He's actually trying to stop his mom, who is attempting to stab Laertes or whatever the fuck you want to do. So that is if you want to change, like, oh, I don't like that my character sucks ass and is a little crybaby bitch. I want to make Hamlet a man of cool stuff. Great. Your Pathos.
Cool sunglasses. Keep falling. No, Ethos again.
Ethos. And yes, Ethos is changing the setting and props.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have a sword. I have a gun and it says sword on it. Eat a dick.
Sword 9mm. What up?
What up? I get my long sword.
I can't hate that movie.
No one can hate that
fucking
movie.
Fucking movie rules.
It's great. Top to bottom. It's
fucking
awesome.
That's my introduction to Baz Luhrmann, who is the director of my favorite movie. So how can I be mad at it?
So you will have 6 points to assign to those three stats.
No stat can be higher than three, which means you can have straight twos or 3-2-1.
You know, whatever.
I think those are your only two options.
Nah, man. You could have, like a three and a...
Two and a one.
And a three and a, yeah. And a zero.
Nope. You can have all twos or a three, a two, and a one.
Nah, I've got no pathos. I'm an awful actor.
You could put a three in Logos and then one each in Pathos, Ethos, and D'Artagnan.
There it is.
Brought it back around.
There we go. You select your actor type, like we said, a lead, a ham, a villain, or an ingenue, assuming you aren't using the Kickstarter
There's the mask.
Yeah, which is just, you know, I'm that dude who does physical performances.
Yeah, you're playing
I'm Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Doug Jones. Whoever you're casting is like someone who is physically very... arresting and interesting.
Yes.
It's not just hot. They have to be, like, bendy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, that's how you make your character. Like, and that's it. Once you're done with that, then you have your character, and then you'll pick your part from the casting that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward, very quick game. There's even a part towards the end where he's like, you know, you're not supposed to play this, like, campaign style, but fuck it, here's some, like... experience point.
If you wanted to add XP, I guess this is what you would do.
If you want to play the game wrong.
If you want to be a dumb asshole about it, here you go.
So what is there is a little more you get to do.
Well, I was going to say, you have, I mentioned before, you have an onstage ability, which let's just go with the ham.
Yeah.
So the ham has an onstage ability of, you know how to play up whatever you're playing, so you can yell cut without spending a story point. Normally, when you want to make a change, you have to yell cut and spend a story point in order to make the change happen. The ham just fucking does stuff.
Yeah. Which has got to be, like, you can't put anyone who's even slightly an asshole like me in that spot, because I'm just going to be like, cut. Ah, no, just keep going. It's fine. I'm sorry. Cut.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Cut. Cut. Oh, no. I was just saying there was a cut in my clothes over here. A cut.
I'm pretty sure cut was my line, actually.
Your offstage ability is that you know how to get on stage. So you can spend a story point to compel someone else to call you into the scene.
Yeah, which by itself is already dramatically changing the play.
Yeah. You're like, all right, well, here's Romeo and he's over Juliet's supposedly dead body, and you're like, hey, call for me, call for the priest, I want to show up.
What are you doing in here, Mercutio? Aren't you like dead or something at this point? Again, I can't
I
tell
am
him
and a apart. Ghost.
Yeah, there's a whole thing in here. We'll get to it in a second. Go ahead and finish up, because there's one more ability on ham.
So yeah, those are your two abilities that you get to use, and then you'll have a direction.
Again,
and so people who know the fate system, the abilities you have are the standard sort of things where it's like, oh, you can use your sort of statistic or your how you are to get a bonus. The direction is a compel from that, where it's you can get points for being compelled.
Yeah.
And so for like the ham is at the playwright's request, you must perform a soliloquy.
Which feels very weird.
Oh, Hamlet, 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 Hamlet. The vampire kingdom hath attacked the castle.
Be out there, fucking soliloquy right now. Suck it in, suck it in, suck it in if you're Rin Tin Tin or Anne Boleyn.
So, and just like in Fate, you can refuse a compel. You can spend your own points to be like, no, I know you were offering me story points to do this, but I'll spend two of mine to just say no.
Yeah, yeah. So each one of the classes has each of those three things. A power they can use while they're on stage, a power they can use while they're off stage, and a compel that the director can use to keep them playing along.
Yeah. So usually the directions are making you do things that are within what your acting type would normally do.
Yes.
So the ham has to take center stage and, you know, take up all the people's attention. The villain has to deny a plea for mercy or justice. So even if you are playing like, oh, I'm going to be the hero in this, like, yes, technically I am normally someone who plays a villain, but in this, I took the role of the hero in this play, and they're like, yeah, but everyone wants to see you be an asshole, so be an asshole.
I'm just picturing, like, Christopher Lee playing Lear.
Yeah, man.
And at one point, he's like, well, I am Christopher Lee, he says as he pulls a gun out of his robe.
just fucking stabs Regan, is like, fuck you, daughter.
And everyone's like, woo, yeah, Dracula.
Love it. Hot.
Get him, Saruman.
Shit's tight.
But because you pick your type, the thing that you are before you start choosing your characters, and there's nothing stopping you from playing against type. If you chose villain at the beginning, there's nothing from stopping you from being like, oh, I want Ophelia, give me that that sweet Ophelia, I'm gonna play the shit out of it.
Yeah, and again, you can be like, oh, either I can try to play it against type and be like, I'm normally a villain, I want to be Ophelia, I want to try and play against that and see what happens, or you can be like, yeah, but what if Ophelia is the villain of the story?
What if she drowns someone else in a river or whatever?
What if Hamlet is such a dickbag that Ophelia is like, yeah, I drowned your uncle in the lake just because you kept whining about it. You wouldn't do anything about it, so I did.
Yes, now I have become Ophelia, drowning-themed supervillain.
I'm going to drown your mom, too. And then I'm going to drown you and tell everyone we got secret married, and then I'll be the queen.
I'm going to drown that weird ghost.
Drown your dad.
already drowned that skull you give a shit about.
You also have a couple other things when you're casting the play. You get handed some lines that are famous lines of that character in the play.
And you're just supposed to, like, work them in wherever appropriate.
Yeah, if you manage to say a famous line of that character and it makes sense that you said it in the scene, then you get some story points. If it doesn't make sense that you said it in the scene, you get one story point for trying.
I knew him, Horatio, a man who read Infinite Jest.
Close enough. Here's a story point.
Plus, that's weird. No one's ever known someone who made it all the way through Infinite Jest. Oh, wait. I'm thinking of Gravity's Rainbow.
You'll then just do your just fucking improv scenes.
You just do five improv scenes with cuts to change the play, which, again, if you're not, like, an expert in the plays, I feel like you're just going to be constantly being told what you're actually doing anyway. So,
because each, like I said, each act is the playwright tells you exactly what happens in the act.
Yeah.
And you either improv out a shitty, no script version of a Shakespeare play, or you can yell cut, spend a story point and go, hey, I think this should happen.
Yeah.
The playwright can either accept it or decline it.
Yeah.
If they decline it, you can try and force the edit. And that's where rolling comes in and where the points that you put into your stats matter.
Yeah, because each point you put into your stats counts for one die to roll to try and force an edit. There are other ways to get dice as well. If you are acting in accordance with a plot that you have control of, that is in your assigned character, then you also get some dice for that. I think it's another two.
Yeah, you can spend a story point to add in either your part or plot.
Yes.
If it matters to what you are changing. So if you're like, all right, my part is or plot is like I'm a dad, and you say, oh, I should forgive my daughter for this because I'm a loving father. You're like, okay, I can spend a story point, get two dice.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. Sorry, Catherine. You know,
My bad.
I had a brief moment of lucidity and I'm cool. And also, here's a bike.
Here's $5. Go see a Star Wars.
There's another way to get them as well, which is a prop. Each character begins the game with a prop, but also props are given out as needed. There's a list of them. They're things like the coin and the standard and the sword, and they will always provide a story point when they are doing a thing that's relevant to that prop. So, for example, whenever you're just trying to monetarily affect the plot in some way, if you have a coin, then that counts as I spend a coin and it becomes two sacks of gold in my hands, and I'll be like, here, I'm contributing these to the war effort so you know that I am your trusted lieutenant who you can trust.
Well, yeah, it's just, do you have a thing that makes whatever edit you are trying to do more likely? So if you're like, oh, I want to kill a guy, and I happen to have a fucking dagger on me, so it makes sense that I would be able to use this to kill him, you're like, great, that's an extra die, and that doesn't cost a story point.
Like, they are codified. There's a whole section that's like, yeah, the standard, the ring, the sword, and so on, but I'm sure you can just make up more if you need to.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I noticed they gave the one good daughter of King Lear, I want to say her name is Catherine, but I'm sure that's wrong.
That's you're thinking of Taming of the Shrew.
I am thinking of Taming of the Shrew. Yeah, that's right. No, whoever the one who was not Regan and Goneril.
Stinky
Caroline.
Pete. Caroline.
Caroline. It's probably Sweet Caroline.
It's probably Sweet Stinky Caroline.
Sweet Stinky Carolina, who gets the standard because she has to come back and lead an army towards the end of the play. So for the rest of the play, she's supposed to, I guess,
Cordelia.
Walk around.
Cordelia.
Cordelia?
Cordelia.
Okay,
the youngest daughter of Lear is Cordelia.
Yeah. So Willow gets like a battle standard that she has to carry around with her the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Anya.
Don't get on ya. High horse. Okay, so yeah, you can spend a story point to get two dice from a part or a plot that is part of this.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a free die from a prop or a place.
Yes.
So if you're also like, oh, we're in the forest and I want to use the forest to change what's going on. Like, oh, a bear shows up. Like, great, you get a free die if you want a bear to show up in the forest.
Yeah.
And then once you have spent all the story points you want, you have any applicable plots or parts or whatever, when you do that, you get your total number of dice and you roll to do your change. If the playwright didn't just accept it outright. Now, There are three tiers of changes. You can do a trivial change, and the target number on the dice that you are rolling to try and beat is a 10.
Yeah.
So if you get a 10 or better, then you can make a trivial change. You know, you're not actually really changing the plot of what goes on. Just a very simple little thing.
Which sounds weird again, because basically you have a beginning and an end point for each one of the scenes, and how you get there is up to your own awareness of whatever the fuck actually happens in Othello, plus how good you are at improv. So it feels like you're already making a lot of those for free. So the trivial change always feels kind of silly to me.
Well, the trivial one feels like, oh, it says that my character is angry at someone. Can I be just slightly mad and not angry?
I am at best miffed.
Yeah, I'm just slightly peeved. Because the problem is, there's trivial, minor, and major, and major ones obviously are like, I kill a character.
Yeah, you off a character, you change the dramatis personae.
Or you're like, I straight up change where this takes place.
Yeah.
So you're like, no, we're not in Scotland anymore. Now we're in Venice Beach.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, that's a major fucking change.
Yeah, no, Romeo's super into Tybalt. That's my...
trivial.
Who isn't?
Minor change at best. And the minor one is... if you're like, oh, you can do non-lethal woundings or poisonings to people, you can fuck with the scenery a bit, you can change the way people are interacting, but trivial is so trivial. I'm like, why would you ever even call, why, like you said, why wouldn't you just act that out in the scene? Because it's not like it's anything that...
The playwright would have to call you out in order to bother with a trivial change.
Yeah.
Because you're still approaching the same endpoint for the scene and for the play. You're just changing the way you got there. And the whole point of this is that the way you get there is pure improv bullshit on your part. So making trivial changes feels very silly.
Yeah, you got... because they give you the, like, here's what happens in the act and generally how people feel towards each other. And if you're just like, oh, I changed the name of the nun to be...
Arthur.
Fernhilda. And you're like, all right, well, great. I'm glad you did that. Mm-hmm. You spent a story point on doing that. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Like, who cares?
Yeah. Minor is, you can make outcome changes towards the scenery, but you can't really, like, kill anyone off or introduce anything
new.
No,
you can change the narrative a bit.
Yeah.
You can wound someone. You can poison someone. You can make a change to the set. But if you want to drastically change the course of the play, like if you go, I kill Macbeth in act one, then that is a major edit to the play. And God bless you if you do it.
Yeah, although there's a section in here, there's like a, oh God, what happened? They just killed my important character in the play. And there's like eight answers, like how to deal with that, like if they kill Romeo off early. And half the answers are things like, Ghost Romeo is here now, and he just goes through the motions exactly the same, but he's a ghost.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, oh, well, he's a ghost now, or some new character steps in and is like, hi, I'm Gomeo.
I'm Normeo.
I'm Gnomeo. I'm in a very shitty movie.
I've brought my friend Mankini with me. And other characters from the Gnomeo and Juliet franchise.
And it's one of those things where I'm like, given that this is an RPG about making stupid changes mm-hmm. to Shakespearean plays, the fact that they're like, yeah, but if you want to make an actual change, it is incredibly difficult to do.
Difficulty 20.
And if you manage to pull it off, they're like, and then just hand wave it away.
Yeah. I mean, they don't necessarily do that. Usually the advice is like, keep the plot the way it is, but have someone else step into that open role and solve the problem instead. You know, like, oh, if Hamlet dies in act one, I guess one of the
flashbacks.
Yeah.
We're having
flashbacks.
Fucking Blades in the Dark style flashbacks.
You just have Rosencrantz be like, and I shall do Romeo or Hamlet things. Guildenstern, go off to die by yourself.
Go on now.
Oh.
Aww.
Guildenstern never gets to live.
It's one of the bits about this where I was like, I understand, because they also say, like, you know, you can change as much as you want as long as you end the play with the type of thing a play should have. So if you're doing a Shakespearean comedy, you can change as much as you want, but it had better end with a wedding.
Everybody get married.
And if you're doing a tragedy, motherfuckers got to die at the end. I don't care what else happens.
Yeah, and if you're doing a history, there's a new king at the end, and everyone's very happy about this new king.
Yeah.
That's, you got to do that. It's every single one of them got to end like that. Romances, I think they all have to end with like a lesson being learned or something. Romances are weird, so.
Yeah, the fact that they were like, this is the Kickstarter thing, it's not part of the base game.
Yeah.
Because it's weird.
Well, I mean, it's romances were also weird. Like, that's where the Tempest is, for example.
Yeah.
Romances is when he pretty much was like, fuck it, magic. We need something for sweeps.
Dumb shit happens. There's now, I don't know, wizards and spirits and shit. And you're like, all right, well.
Like all the fairy ones and so on, and Midsummer Night's Dream and all that. I think those are the ones that count as romances.
Yeah, it's, I wanted to put in weird crap.
Yeah.
But yeah, then if you manage to get your edit, great. Edit happens.
Mm-hmm.
And
the play
then
continues.
You just keep going.
Yeah. And that's basically, I mean, there's also the methods by which you acquire story points to go over.
Which is pretty much just the playwright goes, hey, nice.
Nice. Story point.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's if you like act in character or do something cool, you should get some story points. And if you're thinking, well, hey, could you just spend story points directly into dice if you want to make major changes to the play? Yes. Of course you can. The exchange rate is weird, though. It's 5 story points to buy a die.
Yeah. They're like, if you're not doing this within the, like, props and plots and everything that is part of this, then it would be very difficult to convince the playwright, is basically what that's supposed to be. Because
yes.
If you're like, well, it makes sense that this change would happen because, you know, I have this crown, and I am a ruler, and I'm a father, and so all of these things lead my character to act in such a way. And they'd go, okay, that makes sense, let's make a change. But if you're like, hey, I want to be in charge now, and I know that I'm normally the fool, and I have nothing, but what if I was king?
What if I, Polonius, was the star of this?
It's my time to shine.
Polonius, famously a tiny gnome.
So
yeah, that's the basics of it. There's not, you get the impression, like, it actually says at the beginning that this is a game that was written for a game jam. So this is a book that's in large part meant to dramatically stretch a game jam into full length book speed.
Oh, also I messed up Laertes and Polonius there in my last thing.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. You got it past me. Good job.
Doesn't matter. But I know that I've already got people in the fucking Discord who are like, you fucked up.
Yeah. All you people who like comment immediately instead of listening for the next 5 minutes.
Ah, you said a thing. I'm going to tell you how that's actually in this way. Anyway, it's this way. God damn it.
We don't edit. That's the truth. That's our secret.
The whole thing is, I could have gone back and said, hey, cut that whole bit out and let me redo it where I say the right name of the character, but I won't.
He knows I wouldn't do that.
But I know there's no way that will happen.
I just give him a big nod and a wink and forget about it immediately.
Of course I will.
Huh?
Bing!
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking about 80s boob comedies again. They're never going to get that safe that rec center. Unless a car wash.
Unless.
Yeah, I just kept reading the book, hoping and hoping that we get to a part where he talked about other playwrights and other types of plays, because that was the thing that would have unlocked this game for me. Like, if it had taken that switch to be like, oh, and by the way, this is how you use this for, like, Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, I'd be like, fuck yes, I'm on board again. You got me. Give me some Starlight Express, baby.
I mean, the one problem I would have with that is, I mean, basically, I would say this would have had to have done very well for this to have more to it, because you can't just be like, ah, here's the themes that would go with that. You'd also have to be like, all right, here's the play. Here's the 5 acts it breaks down into. Here are all the characters. Here are their plots and props and everything else.
Everyone's magic trains. It's fine.
Everyone's a train.
Everyone's a magic train represented by a person on roller skates.
Look, I mean, if you've got to cut down cats to the 6 most jellical, what are you going to do?
You get all the ones who have featured songs. That's not a big deal. You just have your Jenny Anderdots, Buster for Jones, Rumpelteazer, and Mungo Jerry. You can definitely combine into a single character. Rumpel Jerry, I assume.
Oh, Mungo Teaser.
Yeah, or Mungo Teaser. You pick one. Skimble Shanks, you're not going to do anything without Skimble Shanks. The number one characters you can get rid of are all these, like, Monka Straps and Victorias and shit that don't fucking matter at all.
Yeah, but who's going to be old Dute?
That's the playwright. The playwright definitely picks old Duke because they got to pick the person who's the winner at the end. And meanwhile, the people in the thing are like, I'm going to add a major edit. Fucking Growl Tiger's a dog. There's a dog in the play now.
Growl Tiger's an actual tiger.
I am the Jellicle Cat. Rawr! Oh, fuck. Yeah, you know what? You are. You win.
Hey, you got it, brother.
And then he gets taken out by McCavity, who finally gets around to the real human law of poaching.
Yep, I told you, every human law.
See, that would have broken it right open for me, because I don't give a flying shit about Shakespeare. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is a problem where, again, looking at this, I'm like, there's a very narrow band of people that I feel like this is for.
And that's fair. You know, you're allowed to write a game for whatever audience you want. That's an important thing. The people are always giving people game advice to write the game for a broad audience. And I get that. If you want your game to be successful, there's two things you have to do. Already have a bunch of successful games and probably work for a large successful company and write to a broad audience.
There's two things you need to do. One, write D&D. Two, be a big sellout.
Pretty much. But if you're just writing for you, yeah, go ahead and make a game where you're rearranging Shakespeare plays. It's fine.
Yeah. And I mean, this got kickstarted. It made money. There are enough people that wanted this that paid for it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you can definitely see the fact that this is written by the guy who owns Magpie. In the fact that, like, he's got John Wick editing. I saw that I think Eloy LaSanta was in the list as one of the people who worked on this game. That's the Mermaid Adventures guy. So there's a lot of names I recognize just in the writing list on this. So it's a big project with a lot of big names.
Yeah.
It's not for me, but then again, that's just because, again, it's not a topic I could bring myself to care about. And it is so much about that topic.
That is my main problem. Yeah. Because I'm like, it would be one thing if it was, hey, we're doing an RPG about being an actor in a Shakespearean play. And I'm like, what a fun setting to be a character in. But they're like, no, you're just doing the play.
That was the thing that lost me. Yeah, I was expecting a lot more like backstage drama stuff where, you know, you're behind the scenes wheeling and dealing for an extra 30 seconds on stage and like trying to parlay this into more fame for your next play.
Yeah, I think there's so little of the character that comes into this that it almost feels like an afterthought that you would have a character that's like, oh, I'm playing a villain. Anyway, what I'm actually playing is I'm as Othello. So the fact that I am a villain actor just means occasionally I get compelled to be an asshole.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like the character you make has all that much narrative weight to them. Like, you're supposed to make an actor. You're supposed to be like, my character is Christopher Lee, villain. With a pathos of three for my great ability to command the others on stage. And I don't care about location because I am Christopher Lee and I look amazing anywhere. So my ethos is one. And I guess the other one is two. Whatever the other one was, it's two.
Logos.
Very average.
Christopher Lee does not care for your logos.
But then you're spending the entire time just being Iago. And not that character, and I feel like that's a bit that I would have preferred to see explored a little more.
Yeah, I would have liked more off the stage to be a thing, because it is just, you have five acts, you're doing the five acts of the play, that's the whole game. You can call cut to try and do some stuff, you've got powers that are like, I'm not in this scene, and I can try and do something,
mm-hmm.
But even then, it's like, what are your powers when you're off stage? To get on stage. You're like, okay, so my power is to just continue being in this play. There's no real personal interaction. There's just in-play interaction.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's a nitpick for me, a thing I would have liked more.
I can't judge this thing for not being the thing I imagined it would be.
I know.
That's not really fair, but that is what I would have liked to see. Like, there's an app game on my phone called Knights of Pen and Paper.
Yep.
And that is a game where you play a D&D party. You don't play the party, you play the people playing D&D.
Yes.
And it's fun because it gets it right. It still works in the trappings of like a D&D town where you go on adventures and so on, but your character classes aren't like fighter and wizard and so on. Instead, they're like jock, nerd, little brother. And they did a great job of kind of controlling it at both levels. So you feel like you're engaged in decorating the room where these guys play D&D in and changing the kind of DM this is. And I would have liked to see a little more of that in this, where you have a directorial style that's important. You have your actor personalities come out and you get to interact as the actors as well. It's just something I feel like is missing here.
Yeah, because otherwise it really feels like this is just an improv prompt where some people doing improv went on stage and were like, we're going to do Hamlet, but I'd like a suggestion from the audience about where we are.
Yeah.
And that's all it is.
It's like the middle 15 minutes of Shakespeare abridged, which, you know, is probably the target audience for this. The people who have been in Shakespeare abridged.
Yes.
But that said, you know, I don't want to judge this game for what I imagined it would be. That's not fair. So instead, let's get to the ending here, and I'm going to ask John to tell me what his favorite thing about this
was. Let's get to the ending and get married.
Yeah, well, it was a comedy.
Finally, all of you shippers.
There has to be a wedding. But it's a Shakespeare-style wedding, so it's going to be really informal and weird.
Unfortunately, this is a tragicomedy, so we also die at the wedding.
Both of us die at the wedding, yeah. We're very busy pouring poison into each other's ears right now. It's hard to do it simultaneously.
Yeah,
yeah.
Real tough, but we make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Live on stage, 5 nights a week. Dark Thursdays.
What?
What was your favorite thing about the game?
Oh, line. No, I think my favorite thing about the game, I don't like a lot of this and I don't dislike a lot of this. It's very difficult for me. Honestly, I think the best thing in this game is that they had a section that was just, here are the main characters, here are all the bits for them, here are some lines, here's a breakdown of the acts.
Yeah, the book would have been almost worthless without that.
Oh, yeah, because if they didn't have that, it'd be like, oh, you literally have to be Shakespearean actors to give a fuck and play this.
Yeah.
So that is the best thing they did in this was go, look, here are the only characters you need to give a shit about. Here's a little breakdown of it. You go to it.
Yeah, without that, I'm only able to name Shakespearean characters if they are the titular character. I'm like, do I know any characters in Titus Andronicus? I'm guessing there's a Titus Andronicus.
One's going to guess that.
The Taming of the Shrew? There's probably a shrew.
Yeah, there's probably Taming Shrew.
I recently learned her name was Catherine.
Indeed.
Unless that's her little sister.
No, that's Bianca, I think.
Okay. It can't be Bianca. She doesn't want to live on that farm. She wants to go back to big cities. That's the life for her.
No, what you need to do is watch 10 Things I Hate About You.
Again, I love that movie and would happily watch it. Let's go watch that right now.
Fuck this. But yeah, I'm going to say the actual breakdown of the plays is probably the best thing in this book for me. What about you?
My favorite thing is the opening DM advice and kind of generic explanation of like why this game exists and what interested Truman to write this game and how he played it, because it gave me a sense of what to expect, and it was well written. That part was like just nice. It was kind of heartfelt. It really carried well the vibe of why this game was written.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that. The actual game itself is fine. There's nothing really wrong with it, but also nothing that really stood out to me.
Yep.
What would you say is your least favorite thing?
I think my least favorite thing in this is going to have to be the story point mechanic for casting the play.
Mm-hmm.
So story points as an actual thing you hand out and then can use to change the play, that's fine. I don't mind that. But saying, like, we're going to start the game, here are 5 story points. If you would like to muck about with these characters that people are going to, like, bid or pass on, you have to spend some of your resources to do, I feel like that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Instead, it should just be, you have 5 points. They are not story points.
Yeah.
And if you have any at the end of this, they do not transfer over.
Yep.
But you can make 5 changes during the casting process. Then I think that would work so much better to go, all right, now you're going to see people throwing out ideas constantly. They're not going to be afraid to hold back on them.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's very rare that I suggest you have different mechanics between character creation and gameplay, because I don't normally like that.
Well, it's also, I don't know that I mentioned it, but when you bid to be like, oh, I'm going to make it so that, you know, Macbeth is actually an alligator or whatever the fuck you're doing,
mm-hmm.
the story point you spent to make that change goes to that character.
Yes,
so whoever then takes that character gets however many points were spent on it, which means you also end up having this incentive where it's like, oh, I don't want to play this character. I don't really like it. But it's already up to 8 points worth, so I'll probably just take it so that I can get the story points. I know that's not how you're supposed to play it, but it's the incentive that is given. And so I think changing the story points to just, you have some edit points to start with for the casting, and that's it. It is unrelated. Would have loved it, but it's my least favorite thing because it has these perverse incentives to play against what the game wants.
Yeah.
There you go. What is yours?
I mentioned it earlier, but I feel very weird in designing a character in a game where you'll never be playing your character as your character.
Yeah.
The time you spend designing your actor feels completely wasted when no one's ever going to call them by that name.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to be like, shut up, Laertes, we're busy. And you're like, my character's name isn't Laertes, it's Duke Ellington, the jazz pianist.
That's right. Duke Ellington here.
Duke Ellington.
As Laertes.
Jazz pianist, Duke Ellington. I feel like it was a wasted opportunity. And it could be fixed in either direction. It could be that you don't need to have a character, like an actor that you're playing, and instead you just inhabit the character of Laertes as yourself. I play as Jeff, the guy who doesn't know dick about Shakespeare. And that way I don't need to worry about this character I'm developing who will never actually experience any spotlight as the character.
Exactly.
So that's probably my least favorite thing. It feels like a disconnect. It feels like a missed opportunity. So
yeah,
there you
because
go.
There isn't that backstage or offstage away from the play setting in it.
Yeah.
It just, like you said, it just doesn't feel like it matters that I've made a character.
Exactly. So would you play this game?
I wouldn't. I said it at the beginning. It's just not a game for me. Because this basically boils down to improv exercises, but you have to do Shakespeare. I'm like, I don't care, man.
It's fair. Just
don't care.
That's fair. I would play this game with some significant reservations, specifically to Penn and Teller. If I had reserved
significant reservations to Penn and Teller.
If someone bought me Penn and Teller tickets in exchange for playing this game with them, I would play this game.
I've seen Penn and Teller. I'm good.
No, I'm kidding. When I meant by reservations.
No, I'm kidding. Fuck Penn and Teller.
Old libertarian douche nozzles. No, I was going to actually say was I would play this game with some heavy modifications rather than reservations.
Yes.
I would play this if it was not just Shakespeare, which, again, it doesn't have to be.
No.
There's a part towards the beginning of the book where it's like, hey, you can set this in any time period you want, any location in the world you want. You don't even have to do Shakespeare plays. That said, our only frame of reference we're ever going to mention for the entirety of the book is Shakespeare, so get used to that.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to tell me, like, we're going to play this game, but it's Neil Simon, we're going to do the fucking nerd, I'd be like, all right, I'll do that. That sounds more interesting to me than I have a bit more connection to that in my mind than I do to Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So I would play it in those circumstances. Especially, I would happily play it if it was one of those ridiculous Broadway adaptations of a cult classic 80s movie. That'd be really fun. You get to play an actor who's in the Broadway revival of the Broadway version of Heathers.
All right, so it's Beetlejuice, but...
So, if it was Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark,
look,
I would play this in a heartbeat.
If the Plays the Thing was about jukebox musicals,
oh, fuck yes.
Obviously, I would be in. If this game was completely different than what it was, clearly I would enjoy it.
It's not completely different. It does mention that you can play things that way. That's just what it would take to get me involved. I just have such a personal mental break from caring a lick about Shakespeare that it doesn't entice me in the slightest, and you need to change that aspect to get me in.
Yeah, I mean, the one of the other things I kept looking at was I was like, oh, I mean, clearly this is supposed to be for an audience of people that aren't just, you know, Shakespearean actors and people that have memorized Shakespeare, but having it be like, oh, you can get story points for doing this line from a Shakespearean play, I'm like, yeah, but you know, in the improv that you're doing, no one is going to be able to fully do Shakespearean lines. And even if they try, if you're like, hey, thou painted fart noble, shalt we duel? And then you're like, and then you look down and read an actual line from Shakespeare. It just feels real weird.
Prithee, sir, whilst thou tarry?
I saw three ships come sailing in.
On Christmas Day, on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Although I definitely prefer doing that. The breakdown riff from Hook.
I'll be playing as Good King Wenceslas in this.
And I'll be playing John Popper circa 1996.
John Popper, villain.
Why you always give me the runaround, Laertes?
Laertes?
It's a surefire way to speed things up. Yeah, sure. So no, without some major changes. There you go.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the plays the thing.
There it is.
And I thought we were done. I for the life of me, I figured that was two episodes of Sweater Weather, and then I realized this is one of those long months.
We got a long ass month.
So now that we've moved to monthly, I'm halfway convincing myself that we should just not do another episode. I'm like, screw it. We did due diligence. We get no bonus. But no, we'll probably do another one.
We don't get anything for this. It's just free.
It's not free. We still
free
get our
real
monthly,
estate.
We still get our monthly payouts and everything, which are going to get bigger soon because, you know, big announcement, of course, here at the One Shot Podcast Network. With the recent abdication of the throne of our Lord and Master TV and Stage and Screens, James D'Amato, we have, of course, risen into the position of leadership and power.
Yeah, now that James D'Amato has stepped down from a leadership position and is going to retire to the countryside in a lovely farm upstate where he can run around.
What happened was he finally was standing in front of a mirror, took off his glasses and paint-stained overalls, and realized he was beautiful.
And now he's going to prom eternally. It's the eternal prom of the spotless mind.
And obviously, System Mastery was there to step into that power vacuum and lay off half the other podcasts.
Yeah, we decided every other person in the One Shot Network needed to give us transcripts of their podcasts, and people with the smallest transcripts were fired.
So we've laid off half the cast of every podcast. So all the ones that were two people are now one person, including this one. We've always been one guy doing two voices.
Yeah, now there's half a guy.
But, you know, watch for that in your favorite podcasts, as each one of them is now only one person because we're in charge and we're going to improve things.
Also, you can pay us $8 if you want to have a little blue mark next to your podcast.
That's right. We'll post a blue mark next to your podcast for each person who increases their pledge by $8. I'm just kidding. All that's actually happening is that James is stepping down from hosting one of his many shows.
With so many shows.
He's just not going to do One Shot anymore. And had a big announcement today, and I've been messing with him. That's all it is.
The other announcement, of course, we're going to have ads.
Yeah.
And that segues very well into going to our Patreon at patreon.com/systemmastery. If you support us, you help the show. You help us out. We get to keep doing what we're doing. And you get access to so much bonus content, like the bonus content for this show, where we're going to go make some characters, some actors, that will be in a play.
Yeah, and our new system is monthly, which means that you, to hear that, all you have to do is pledge at the $2 level, where we will only ever charge you $2, because
$2 a month.
No longer are we doing it per episode, even though we never betrayed your trust, not once.
Never ever did we accidentally hit that button when we published a Movie Mastery episode and then said, please don't press it for the next System Mastery episode. That never happened.
Did that actually ever happen?
That happened once.
It did? I don't remember.
Literally once I accidentally hit the charge for this and went, oh, fuck!
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yes. It was very early on when we had barely anyone subscribe.
Okay.
But I fucked up and was like, hey, don't hit that button for
back
the next one.
Back in the
early
days, we were like, hey guys, we need $6 a month to keep the website online.
If we can get up to $20 a month, then by God, we'll never take off our clothes.
And we've held that promise to this very day.
But we are putting in ads. If you are not a patron, you may have noticed ads running in the middle of this, maybe at the end, maybe at the beginning, maybe even in your own mind. Mm-hmm. But if you are a patron, of course, it is always ad-free. But we are adding these ads in so that we can have, you know, a little bit of money so that Sage can wear new clothes instead of the bags that she has been walking around in.
Yeah, I've gotten tired of having to give her Wonder Bread bag shoes, and each pledge that we get from you buys her a real shoe.
One real shoe.
One real shoe per
two
pledge.
Two pledges for a pair of shoes.
And since there's, you know, already almost 1,000 patrons, we've already got like an Imelda Marcos amount of shoes.
Unfortunately, thinking... Sage is a little kid and so will immediately grow out of all of them within a year.
I live in a pile of shoes now.
I am an old lady who lives in a shoes.
So, but yeah, please do support us. You know, if you can't enjoy the ads, they're not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, you can always hit a skip button. Yeah, it
helps us keep paying the bills when they start happening. But our big pledge is that as long as we can, we will maintain Patreon is 100% ad free. You can skip them by coming there instead.
Yep.
And also, you know, of course, if you increase your pledge by $8, then we can't stop you from pretending to be our advertisers and pissing them off so bad that we can't use them anymore.
Spend those $8 a month and just, I don't know, whoever an ad you heard for, mm-hmm. just tweet and say like, hey, System Mastery is a fart balls.
It's me, Manscaped. I'll shave your balls the fuck off.
I'm going to shave your balls so hard.
Me undies only stretch four ways, not eight.
Hey, micromodal isn't actually a thing. We don't have any type of fabric like that.
Dollar Shave Club is a piece of shit. Pepsi's better.
I like to go to a restaurant and be like, hey, can I get a Diet Shave Club? And they're like, is Diet Pepsi all right? No, it isn't.
It's not.
I prefer Diet Shave Club.
I want my bulk bargain bin Norco razor that we're pretending is useful.
Let's just piss every advertiser off.
For $8, I will.
For $8, I'll piss off anyone you want me to.
Let's get out of here before we... Before we belabor the point too much, I don't want this to become Love's Belabor's Lost.
Hey!
There it is. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you in the Patreon. Have a good one.
Welcome to Character Creation Cast, a show where we create and discuss characters, the best part of role-playing games, with guests using their favorite systems. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Bolter.
And I'm your other host, Amelia Antrim. Join us as we sit down with game designers, podcasters, and fans of games as we dive into learning about different RPGs through the lens of character creation. It's a combination of character building, player advice, game design insights, and even a little bit of fan fiction for a different game every month. We tackle a variety of new and old games, both well-known and indie-produced titles.
We learn how creating characters can tell us a lot about the games themselves. Check us out today anywhere you can get podcasts or on the OneShot Podcast Network at oneshotpodcast.com.